Thank you and welcome. Again, I am Margaret Pichardo, and I collaborated on this work with Dr. Chambers, who's here present, and Dr. Emily Rosenberg from Fordham University and Albert Einstein College of Medicine. This is the study, the data from the study comes from the Affordable Housing as an Obesity Mediating Environment, and I'm shortened for a home study. And today I have no relationship to disclose. To give you some background, the National Science Foundation recommends that adults sleep between 7 to 9 hours a day. However, the CDC reports that about 30% of Americans do not meet this requirement, so they're getting insufficient sleep. We know from national reports that sleep duration varies by socioeconomic status, by race, by ethnicity. In fact, we know that adults who live at the poverty level or below are at higher risk of sleeping long durations of sleep, so sleeping more than 9 hours. We know that sleep duration is associated with increased risk of chronic diseases such as cardiovascular disease and obesity. And in fact, we know that other aspects of sleep are also associated with increased obesity, even poor nutrition. And I list them here as sleep duration, sleep quality. Sleep quality is also associated with poor physical and mental health outcomes. And we know that sleep disturbances or difficulty falling asleep, such as also known as sleep latency, is associated with stroke and increased cardiovascular disease. Among Hispanics and Latinos, we don't really have a large understanding of their sleep health. And there's very little literature looking at the sleep environment under which Latinos sleep and how that impacts their health overall and increases their risk of chronic diseases. We know that although Latinos are at higher risk than whites to live in higher poverty areas, they're actually more as likely as whites to get sufficient sleep. So this is a conundrum, given that higher poverty areas can undermine sleep health. When studies actually look at sleep among Latino subgroups, they do find that among Latinos, there's variation across different nationalities. So non-Mexican Latinos are reporting sleep patterns are more consistent with increased chronic diseases risk than Mexican Americans. So there are variation, and it's important to look at Latino subgroups as well. More recently, the studies that are actually studying sleep health, their main focus is to associate the sleep health and different dimensions of sleep with physical and mental health outcomes. But we don't know how Latinos get to poor sleep in the first place. We do know that the neighborhood and the household environment can undermine sleep. In recent studies, including one that came out last year, demonstrated that individuals who live in adverse neighborhood and household environment reported poor sleep outcomes. We actually know that household crowding is another determinant of sleep health, and individuals who share beds or live in crowded households are at increased risk of reporting daytime sleepiness, and among children, having later wake-up times. Nonetheless, as I said, it's important to understand how we get to poor sleep in the first place. So looking at that back end and understanding how where people sleep in and under what conditions undermines their sleep health. As a result, our study had two aims. First, we wanted to look at how the household and the neighborhood environment was associated with four dimensions of sleep. We also thought it would be interesting to look at how the accumulation of both neighborhood and household crowding environment impact the sleep, not just each one in isolation. Our study was funded by the MacArthur Foundation, and we obtained ethics committee's approval from Albert Einstein and from Fordham University. And if you're interested in learning more about the study, you can check out our link. Okay, so our sample consisted mainly of only of Latinos who were 18 years or older, who were currently renting at the moment of the study, and who were eligible for federal rental housing assistance. And this is a map of the Bronx, and we sampled, we randomly selected households using USPS lists from the West and South Bronx, and this is the shaded area where our sample frame came from. Our goal was to approximately recruit participants who were living in public housing, receiving Section 8 vouchers, and participants who were not receiving any federal rental assistance. So our goal was to approximately recruit participants, equal number of participants from each of these type of housings. We conducted interviews from January 2011 to August 2012, and they were conducted by bilingual interviewers. And our survey was about an hour long, assessing physical activity, household and neighborhood conditions, diet, a range of social demographic factors, and we also took anthropometric measurements. This table gives you an idea of how reflective our sample was to the New York City sample. And the New York City and Housing Vacancy Survey conducts a survey every 3 years conducted by the Census Bureau. And to compare it to the A Home sample, we created a sample criterion where we chose the 2011 survey, and from that we chose individuals who were Latino, who were 18 years or older, currently renting, and were living in the West and South Bronx. And we compare a range of characteristics to our sample. And what we find is that our samples are very reflective. Female proportions are quite similar, age is similar, the breakdown of ethnicity is similar, and so on. Okay, so we look at four dimensions of sleep. Sleep disturbance, sleep quality, sleep duration, which we break down into short, normal, and long, and sleep latency, and this is the difficulty of falling asleep within 30 minutes. These items come from the Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index, and this is a commonly used scale that's highly reliable and validated, and it's used in the sleep literature. To assess sleep disturbance, we ask participants, during the past month, how often have you had trouble falling asleep? And we list eight items from which they can respond never, less than one time per week, 1 to 2 times per week, or 3 or more times per week. For this measure, we created a disturbance scale, and we took mean responses across all eight items to generate a summary scale that ranged from 1 to 4. For sleep quality, we asked, during the past month, how do you rate your sleep quality pattern overall? From these responses, very good, fairly bad, or very bad, we created a binary variable to represent good quality and poor quality of sleep. Next, for sleep duration, we asked during the past month, at what time have you usually gone to bed, or at what time have you usually gone up? And responses were an hour, which we then created a three-category variable to represent short sleep, normal sleep, and long sleep. And for sleep latency, we asked during the past month, how often have you had trouble sleeping because you cannot get to sleep within 30 minutes? This was also a binary variable with individuals categorized as either sleeping less than 3 times per week or sleeping 3 or more times per week. Okay, so for our household and neighborhood variables, we looked at sleep crowding, neighborhood disorder, building problems, and this cumulative index that reflects the accumulation of both building and neighborhood disorders in the environment. Our crowding variable was defined according to the federal government standards of number of persons per room, so either one person per room, less than one person per room, or 1 or more persons per room. And for a neighborhood disorder, we ask for each one, please tell me if it is a big problem, somewhat of a problem, or not a problem, and this is supposed to say in your neighborhood, and we list 12 items. And again, we create a summary scale by taking the mean responses across all eight items and generating a scale that ranges from 1 to 3. Building problems was assessed by asking how much of a problem is, we list the eight items here, would you say it is a big problem, somewhat of a problem, or not a problem in your building? And this is similar to the previous one where we generate mean responses across all eight items to get a summary scale that ranges from 1 to 3. The cumulative index was created because our building scale and our neighborhood disorder scale were highly correlated. Therefore, they cannot be introduced in the model at one time, given the fact that they could introduce multicollinearity. And this reflects the fact that some individuals can actually be burdened by either multiple conditions in their environment or live in environments that are relatively free of any social or disorder burdens. Therefore, what we do is we take the original building problem scale and the original disorder scale, and we create quintiles. We take the top quintile to represent extreme conditions, and we create dichotomies based on this. We cross-tabulate the dichotomies to generate an index that has four categories. No extreme conditions, building problems only, neighborhood disorder only, and both building and neighborhood disorder. We looked at several covariates and adjusted for these in our model. These include education, housing type, smoking history, physical limitation, and this variable is either none versus at least one of these three limitations here, difficulty getting in and out of bed or a chair, walking across a small room without resting, or walking for 10 minutes without resting. We also adjusted for the presence of children under six in the household, for obesity, and interview language. For our analysis, we conducted ordinary least squares regressions for our continuous outcomes, logistic regressions for our categorical outcomes, and multinomial regression for our outcome with more than two categories. We estimated three models, one looking at the association between neighborhood disorder and each sleep outcome, a second looking at the association between building problems and each sleep outcome, and each of these models also adjusted for household crowding, and also for health-related conditions and demographics. What we find is that about three-quarters of our sample is female. You see that the average age is 46 as well, and a little over half interview in Spanish and had never smoked. Less than half were obese and had less than a high school education. When we look at sleep outcomes, we see that about a third of our sample reported poor sleep quality and difficulty falling asleep three or more times per week. And similar proportions were short sleepers, normal sleepers, and long sleepers. Our sleep disturbance scale ranged from 1 to 4, and the mean disturbance score was 2.13. And our neighborhood disorder scales and building problem scales range from 1 to 3, with means of 1.79 and 1.75, respectively. And when we look at our index, accumulation index, we find that 3/4 are reporting no extreme conditions, yet 14% are reporting a burden by both the building and the neighborhood environment. So for our first predictive model, we see that individuals who are living both in neighborhood disorder environments, who are reporting building problems, and who are burdened by both building and neighborhood problems are, in fact, reporting increased sleep disturbances. And remember, this model is also adjusted for our covariates and health-related characteristics. When we look at poor sleep quality, we find that individuals who are reporting neighborhood disorder, who are also experiencing building problems, and are burdened by both building and neighborhood disorder are actually at higher risk for poor sleep quality. Sleep latency, similarly, we find that individuals reporting building problems and are burdened by both building and neighborhood problems at a higher risk of having difficulty falling asleep. Now, when we look at short versus normal sleep durations, we find no associations. But when we look at normal versus long sleep durations, we find that individuals who are in crowded households are at a decreased risk of long sleep duration. And this is both compared to normal sleep durations and long sleep durations. So this model is just the opposite of the previous slide. Overall, we do find that sleep disturbance is associated with an increased positively associated with neighborhood disorder, with building problems, and the burden of both building and neighborhood problems. Poor sleep quality is associated with an increased likelihood of neighborhood disorder, building problems, and both building and neighborhood issues. And we also see that prolonged sleep latency is associated with a higher risk of building problems and this accumulation of both building and neighborhood problems. Long sleep, however, relative to normal and short sleep duration, was associated with a decreased risk of household crowding. The good news is that we know the sleeping environment can be improved, and once we modify characteristics in the environment, people's sleep quality improves. An intervention conducted last year in Buenos Aires, Argentina, found that once individuals were upgraded from living in slums, were upgraded to better housing with structural and better sleeping conditions, their sleep quality significantly improved. So there are factors that can be changed in the environment to improve sleep health. We do identify the need for more data that looks at a longer period of time in order to establish a causal relationship. We also suggest the need to incorporate in sleep studies, to incorporate several sleep measures to identify multiple dimensions of sleep. As we saw, each dimension of sleep interacts differently with their environment, and as a result, can affect different aspects of sleep health. In terms of our limitations, we conducted a cross-sectional study, so we cannot establish a causal relationship, and we use self-reported data, so this may have introduced some recall bias into our data. We also did not use the full Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index, which is commonly used in the sleep literature, but our survey was very long, so we focused on major dimensions of sleep. Our sleep duration could have overestimated our bedtime because we did not assess actual time slept. Instead, we asked when they went to bed and at what time they got out of bed. We also did not assess daytime napping or sleepiness, and these dimensions have been recently reported as significantly associated with poor health outcomes. And as you might know, our findings are not generalizable to an entire Hispanic population. We studied a subgroup of urban Latinos living in New York. Nonetheless, our findings are consistent with the current literature on sleep. We do look at multiple cultural identities in our Hispanic population. And as you saw before, our sample is very reflective of the Bronx, New York City area. We did, and this is why the study is important, we did identify which characteristics in the environment can be changed in order to improve sleep and which might be influencing people's sleep health. We also highlight that it's important to look at the accumulation of an individual's environment context, so the accumulation of both building disorder, building problems, and neighborhood disorder, not just each individually, as this may also undermine sleep. These are my references. And our study was published in the Behavioral Science Medicine Journal. And I would like to thank the Affordable team for making the study happen. Thank you.